HYY.
I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. Last week, U.S. District Judge John E. Jones struck down Pennsylvania's ban on same-sex marriage. He said that constitutional guarantees of due process and equal protection trump any discomfort a person has about gay marriage, as well as traditional notions about marriage. He wrote, "In future generations, the label of same-sex marriage will be abandoned to be replaced simply by marriage. We are better," Jones said, "than what these laws represent, and it's time to discard them into the ash heap of history." It is a passionately argued opinion and a landmark decision, making Pennsylvania the 19th state that has legalized same-sex marriage. Governor Corbett has announced he would not appeal this ruling. We have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Let me introduce them to you. John Culhane is a professor of law at Widener University School of Law, and he's a contributing writer to Slate. And John Culhane, nice to have you back with us on Radio Time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Brian Sims. He's a Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, serving the 182nd District in Philadelphia. He's the first openly gay person elected to the state legislature. And Brian Sims, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you.
You're welcome. And also with us is Angela Giampolo. She's a founder and principal of Giampolo Law Group here in Philadelphia. She's an advocate for the LGBT community, also known as Philly Gay Lawyer. And Angela, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
I'd like to begin with Judge Jones' very first sentence that he wrote, and he says, "Today," this is what he wrote last week, "today, certain citizens of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania are not guaranteed the right to marry the person they love." And John, I don't read legal opinions very much, but I felt like he really tipped his hand in that very first sentence.
He did, and I think with a lot of these decisions, you see this very powerful rhetoric married to legal analysis, no pun intended. So he goes on for a few pages talking about sickness and health and richer for poorer, and kind of takes these same-sex couples and puts them in the embrace of marriage as everybody knows it. And I think you could really see from the beginning what he was interested in doing and how he was situating these couples.
In fact, he talked about the diversity of couples, Brian, as he described the various plaintiffs who were appealing the ban on same-sex marriage in Pennsylvania, representing a really big cross-section of the population.
In a very sort of literary opinion, it's actually one of my favorite parts of the entire opinion, is when he talks about the 11 couples, he talks about the children, he talks about the widow. I heard the widow speak later in the day on Tuesday, and she said, "You know, I didn't actually become a widow until today at 2:30, which was pretty powerful. But Judge Jones, as you said, he talked about the fact that these plaintiffs represented all cross-sections of Pennsylvania, doctors and lawyers, but homemakers and certainly parents. He spoke a lot about the life and the loves of these plaintiffs.
How did you read this opinion, Angela?
Well, I want to commend the ACLU and Hanley Aaronchuk in even constructing such an amazing complaint. I mean, how it was constructed allowed Judge Jones to then interpret it, right? Because the ACLU chose these 23 people, these 11 couples, five that were already married, six that were seeking to marry, the widow, and then actually two children of the plaintiffs, and their damages of not being socially recognized. So it was just such a fascinating and beautifully constructed complaint that as a softball to Judge Jones to hit it right back.
It felt like a softball to you?
Right.
I agree.
And you agree, John Culhane?
I agree. I mean, it's also important to see that this is the latest in a string of cases that's been decided since United States versus Windsor last summer, where the Supreme Court, we can now see, in hindsight, kind of teed these cases up to come out the way that they did. So can I talk about Windsor for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
So in Windsor, the court said that one section of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act was unconstitutional. And that was the section that said, even if you're married in your home state, that law is not recognized for federal purposes. And Justice Kennedy, writing for a 5-4 majority, said, "That's just a weird thing for Congress to have done. Congress doesn't usually muck around in a marriage law that really is for the states." And that suggests to us that there's something else going on, that really was about sort of dislike of gay people and gay couples and gay relationships. And so what the court did there was it said that this is really a question that's historically for the states. So you might think, well, then if the states get to decide, then all of these marriage laws should be good. But that's one part of Windsor. The other part, which has been sort of uniformly seen as more important by these district courts, has been all this language in Windsor about the dignity of same-sex couples and their lives, and about how excluding same-sex couples from marriage demeans them and humiliates their children. And that's the piece of Windsor that really has been in ascendance ever since last summer. And this is the latest in a string.
Brandon, if I can go to you, and even going back to Pennsylvania's Defense of Marriage Act, this was, I guess, went into law in 1996.
Yeah.
And this is what got overturned.
It did. If you'll remember, in the mid-90s, Hawaii became the first state to grant same-sex marriage rights. They found in their constitution a way to do it. And in response, in the next 2-3 years, half the states in the country found a way to enact some type of a statewide Defense of Marriage Act. And most of them were simply an assertion that marriage is between one man and one woman, which is part of Pennsylvania's marriage laws. But we then went a step further, saying that same-sex marriage or marriage equality did not fall within the protections of Pennsylvania's law. So not only have we said that we'll only allow opposite-sex couples to marry in Pennsylvania, but we've said overtly in our laws that we will not recognize marriages lawfully performed in other states. And that was a particular point here in this decision.
And that's, in a sense, what the judge was referring to, and I guess what he upended.
Indeed, in his due process analysis.
Well, there are two strands to the case, or two pieces of the Pennsylvania law. So, and I think Angela adverted to this. So the first is that same-sex couples resident in Pennsylvania can't marry, right? No marriage licenses can be issued. Mm-hmm. The second piece of it, though, is the non-recognition of marriages from other states. And so you had plaintiffs who fell into both categories here, and both pieces of those laws were struck down in this case.
Angela, in practical terms, then, what does this ruling mean for gay couples living in Pennsylvania?
I mean, it's absolutely huge. You know, if you were married in one of the other 18 states prior, Massachusetts just celebrated its 10-year anniversary about a month ago. So there are thousands of gay couples that are married all over the country. They woke up in Pennsylvania, the married couples that, you know, they've always been. And there's a line in Judge Jones's opinion that states that the plaintiffs weren't arguing for a right that they've never had. They're not arguing for a new right. They're arguing for a right that they've been denied this whole time, right? So for all of those people that were married in any of the 18 states, they were considered married in Pennsylvania. And then for the people who've always wanted to go get married and have been waiting, I have clients that literally they called me up that day. They've been together 43 years and we're going to wait for this day or die. You know, and I have chills.
So they got married?
They did. They went that Saturday, and Judge Dan Anders was one of the people to have married them. So,
Bram, was this a surprise decision? I mean, I think it came, whatever the decision, it came earlier than people had anticipated.
Yeah, I think it did come earlier. If you'll remember, for a while we thought that there was going to be a full trial on this case, and it became clear that there just wasn't much of a defense that was going to be brought. I mean, Judge Jones references it himself, but of the four, I think, major pleadings, really most of them just simply weren't defended. And so, yes, to some extent, this was earlier than we expected. As Angela said, most of us who've been paying attention to this in Pennsylvania knew that the legal team that was leading this charge is the best, certainly the best in Pennsylvania, perhaps one of the best in the country, and that therefore that this case had the potential to be, as John said earlier, one of the Supreme Court cases. So, yes, it was a surprise. We have a lot of work to do. Pennsylvania doesn't have any other LGBT civil rights at a statewide level, which creates a really unique situation for all these wonderful families that we're talking about.
And we're talking about things like discrimination in housing or jobs, in employment, and things like that.
And public accommodations, even at the most basic level, LGBT people are not protected statewide in Pennsylvania, and that's really unusual.
I heard a comedian, I can't remember her name, who said, you know, here we are, gays and lesbians can serve in the military and they can get married. These are two things that I'm not necessarily interested in getting for myself. Why do you think these two issues have been the driving issues?
Because these are the two issues where the government is directly involved in the deprivation of the liberty. So in cases like jobs or housing or accommodation, the government is really placing a requirement on private actors for the most part, right? And one of the reasons why the LGBT community fought so hard on military and marriage was because those were the two areas where the state was directly involved in the deprivation. And so I think it's the clearest case in terms of, you know, state-sanctioned bias against LGBT people.
Go ahead, Angela.
To go back to the practicality standpoint, within 2 days of the decision coming down, I received a phone call from a lesbian couple where they had announced that they were going to get engaged and that they were going to be married. And right away, the boss of one of them went to HR and started discussing potentially finding a way to fire them. And I got a phone call. And so to go back to employment non-discrimination, these people all around the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania can now get married. And then they go in and put in for their 2 weeks gay honeymoon and or put their wife's picture on their desk, and they could get unilaterally fired in the majority of counties in Pennsylvania. Aside, Brian will probably know the number, the 28 some odd counties, you know, that have enacted their municipalities that have enacted their own protection. So it's a real concern, and I've been asked by other reporters, Angela, is it really that big of a deal? Does this really happen? You know, and I'm like,
Do people actually get fired for putting the photo of their
right? You know, and I said, spouse. Do you want to answer my emails that come in through the website 3 to 5 times a week? You know, so it is a serious concern for Pennsylvanians, and you know, let alone people in Fort Worth, Texas, and, you know, all around the country as gay marriage becomes national.
And this happens all the time. There's a well-known case from Georgia where a woman had been provisionally hired by the attorney general there, and she and her same-sex partner went out of state, I think, or maybe not, but they had a ceremonial marriage, but not a legal one, and the job offer was rescinded, and she appealed this all the way to the Federal Court of Appeals and lost because there was no job protection. So this kind of thing can and does happen, and it will continue to happen, and maybe happen in greater numbers in Pennsylvania until the law sort of adjusts.
Well, let me toss that to you about a minute before our first break here, Brian. Then is this an issue that you and some of your fellow members of the legislature will take up then?
You know, I'm pleased to say it was taken up long before I got there. I'm obviously there help trying to finish, if you will. You know, HB 300 and SB 300, the state's non-discrimination laws that amend the Human Relations Act to include sexual orientation and gender identity, they've been around for years and years. I'm happy to say that in the last year, they've seen the most support that they've ever seen in the Commonwealth. But as John just alluded to, we might now be seeing more overt cases of discrimination that unfortunately, you know, I'll be able to bring to my colleagues and say this is just all the more reason that we need to bring Pennsylvania's civil rights laws into the 21st century.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Brian Sims. He's a Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, serving the 182nd District here in Philadelphia. Also with us, Angela Giampolo. She's a founder and principal of Giampolo Law Group. And also with us, our third guest is John Culhane. He's a professor of law at Widener University School of Law. And we are talking about the fact that same-sex marriage is now legal in Pennsylvania as a result of a decision last week and a decision by the governor that he would not appeal that ruling. We're going to take a short break, get back to our conversation. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this break. We'll be right back.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
This week in This American Life, Sarah was in a car wreck and went into a coma with a traumatic brain injury. And when she came to, she had trouble remembering the years before her accident. Big stuff, like divorcing her husband.
The doctors said you don't want to create any more trauma with her. And so if she's indicating that she thinks that she's still married, you can't just drop that bomb on her.
That's this week.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Washington, D.C. native James Tillman originally wanted to be an accountant, but ended up in music instead.
Closing both my eyes, shutting out the world.
We'll hear about Tillman and other artists on the DJ Sessions next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Brian Sims, Angela Giampolo, and John Colhane about the fact that as of last week, Pennsylvania became the 19th state that legalized same-sex marriage. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. I mentioned the fact that Governor Corbett said he would not appeal this ruling, and I just want to quote something that his chief of staff said about the governor. Prior to the opinion being released, the governor was conflicted between his personal and religious beliefs based on his Catholic upbringing and teachings and the legal arguments that were made in Judge Jones' opinion. Does that seem like a fair struggle for a governor, sort of knowing where he stands on this issue, John Colhane?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, you can always look at these things with an overlay of politics and sort of how it plays out in the election, and Brian might be better positioned to talk about that. But I do think a lot of people have gone through a struggle, and there's been a lot made about how younger people in great majorities favor the rights of same-sex couples to marry. But it's also true that even older people, as they've seen more and more couples marrying, and they've really been forced to confront the arguments against it, really have started to change their opinions and their minds. And I think if we take him at his word, he's struggling to reconcile, you know, personal experience, maybe knowing couples, religious belief, and then just looking at the arguments that the state advanced, which was, as Brian stated, were really kind of advanced in a lukewarm way. The judge said these arguments are not very stoutly defended. They are basically saying back in 1996, the legislature could have had legitimate reasons for doing this, you know, reproduction and childbearing, but their heart really wasn't in it. Mm-hmm. So I think he is struggling in that way.
How do you see it, Brian? I mean, and I know, Angela, you want to jump in as well.
Well, you know, I don't know anybody that hasn't had to evolve on how they felt about LGBT civil rights and issues. So I don't fault the governor in any way for that. I'm, of course, reminded that this is a governor that just last year said that any of us here getting married would be like marrying our brother or sister. This is a governor who said that he didn't know up until this year that LGBT people could legally be discriminated against in Pennsylvania, even though he's a former attorney general. What I know politically is that had this issue not been resolved and had we gone into the November elections, Tom Wolf versus Tom Corbett, and had this been an issue still in Pennsylvania, it's an issue that Tom Corbett would have lost on. Mm. The majority of Pennsylvanians support civil rights for LGBT, for all LGBT people, not just LGBT Pennsylvanians. And I think had this been an issue that they were going back and forth on, I think that this is, and we've known for years now, probably the last 2-3 years, that being anti-gay, being anti-LGBT no longer builds you the majorities, even in Pennsylvania, that it used to. So I think that Governor Corbett got maybe not lucky with the timing here, but just as we saw with Governor Christie, he was able to say, my personal views, I'm still opposed to this, but in my public role, I've done the triage of determining whether legally defending this is something that the state should be doing, and I've decided it's not.
Angela?
Well, I'm not a politician, so I don't have to be PC, and I'm quite frankly over the religious conservative struggle, okay? We've struggled long enough at the end of the day, and if the moral, quote-unquote, majority, which I always found an oxymoronic term, thinks that gay marriage tears away at the social fabric, you know, and the mores of the United States and our families, then at the end of the day, their argument should be about banning divorce.
Because that's a bigger threat to marriage.
And family. Right? And societal. You don't prevent other loving people from entering into a marriage which has legal and financial and psychological benefits that are needed in this society. If you are that steadfast around it, then look towards banning divorce, not preventing other people from actually marrying.
Let me just jump in here, and I'll put this to you, John Colhane, because I wonder whether once gay and lesbian couples were given the right to adopt children,
right,
whether that was sort of the beginning of the end of banning same-sex marriage. Because once you have children, then you can make a very conservative argument, right, that children need the security of a marriage.
Right, and I've said this for years. I think what happened was that in various states and in various ways, same-sex couples were gaining the rights to adopt children. In many cases, what you had was an opposite-sex couple that would divorce, and then one member of the couple would become involved in a same-sex relationship and would be raising a child. There were all different ways that these families were being created, surrogacy. And once that started to happen, and once the state started to support that, particularly in the case of adoption, it becomes really difficult to argue that the state shouldn't support those families. And in fact, in Justice Kennedy's opinion in U.S. versus Windsor, there's a lot of talk about same-sex couples and their children. And in fact, in the oral argument for one of the cases, it was either the Proposition 8 case out of California or Windsor, I think it was the Proposition 8 case, where Justice Kennedy said, but don't the voices of these children of same-sex couples matter? You know, in Europe, they did it the other way around. They started recognizing the relationships first and then allowed same-sex couples to adopt. Here, we've done it the other way, and I think the argument about marriage is basically over once you allow same-sex couples to adopt and to create families, because why wouldn't you want to protect those families?
I wonder, Brian, whether having a judge rule, as Judge Jones did, whether that has more staying power than if this were put to the legislature, for instance, or even to the voters to vote on gay marriage or not.
You know, I think in many ways this is certainly not the end of the discussion on marriage equality in Pennsylvania. As most of the rights that we all currently enjoy, as they became a part of the sort of the legal spectrum, if you will, it was in cases, it was in laws, it was municipal laws and state laws and federal laws, and it's sort of the network. And so I think in Pennsylvania, you know, we are going to pass a Pennsylvania Marriage Equality Act in Pennsylvania at some point. We have to. We're going to pass laws that allow for divorce of LGBT couples in Pennsylvania. We have to. And so, you know, yes, you know, will this decision itself have staying power? Just to read it, I think it will. It's so incredibly well written. But will that be exclusive of other means or pathways to equality in Pennsylvania? Absolutely not. We're still going to have to pass laws in Pennsylvania that reflect what we learned from this decision.
Well, and I got a press release from, I think it's the American Family Association. Basically, he's saying, you know, call Governor Corbett, tell him to appeal this outrageous decision. Judge Jones had no constitutional authority to make laws from the bench. This is coming from the American Family Association.
Well, and of course, you're still hearing the same thing that we've been hearing for years. But I think as one district court after another lines up and all are reaching the same decision, using very similar logic and leaning so heavily on U.S. versus Windsor, I think those cries are becoming fainter and they don't kind of get the publicity that they got. And I think it's because the state itself has really kind of abandoned the arguments or is giving sort of a watered-down version of them. I do want to say one other quick thing. I think it's very important for the state of Pennsylvania to actually repeal the law, the DOMA law, and to pass a marriage equality law, because one of these cases is going to reach the U.S. Supreme Court probably within the next couple of years. The smart money is that the court will declare all of these laws unconstitutional, but it's not a slam dunk. And there's this possibility that if the Supreme Court said that laws like this were constitutional, these state defense of marriage acts, depending on how that decision were worded, it could reanimate laws like Pennsylvania's law. Huh. So that has to be repealed. And then you'd have this huge problem with people who've been married for a couple of years. Are those marriages valid? It would be a huge step back. I don't expect it will happen, because I think Justice Kennedy, to be frank, is the only vote that matters. But, you know, what if there's a change in presidential administration, and what if new justices are in? You know, you never know until the Supreme Court decides. So it's really important to get this law off the books.
And that's John Culhane. He's a professor of law at Widener University School of Law. He's a contributing writer to Slate. Also with us, Brian Sims, a Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. Angela Giampolo, founder and principal of Giampolo Law Group here in Philadelphia, also known as the Philly Gay Lawyer. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Before we get to our callers, though, Angela, I have a question for you about again, very practical things about inheritance, about paying taxes, about, I guess, second parent adoptions. I mean, all these very practical issues that how were they changed then by this ruling?
To everybody who is now either getting married or is considered married due to this decision has a lot of housekeeping to do over the next 3 to 4 months. I'm telling all of my clients all of their estate planning documents need to be updated, both to reflect the legal relationship. So probably they were called domestic partner, and now it should be husband, spouse, wife. And also there were a lot of estate planning tools unavailable to me as their attorney, pour over wills. I mean, some really basic things that husband-wives relationships have always had, and so their wills isn't necessarily what I had would have drafted had they been legally married. Different trusts available to me for my high net worth clients that now we don't have to use these basic, typical, we call them LGBT estate planning, right? It was all that was available to us. So that's really exciting for, you know, the legal dorks in the room.
I think there are three legal dorks here. But
from an adoption standpoint, it's very exciting. Through the IVF procedure, you should still be doing second parent adoptions to make sure that you fully terminate the sperm donor's rights. However, LGBT couples are 6 times more likely to adopt generally and 4 times more likely to adopt out of foster care. So the fact that now we can petition jointly, so it's not that I adopt Joey and then you as my wife then, once I allow you, then adopt Joey through me, called a second parent adoption, that's double the amount of time, double the legal fees. Now we could just, as a couple, adopt Joey simultaneously in what's called a joint petition. Taxes, I went to law school because I don't do numbers, so call your accountant on that. But, you know, it's sad to say, but if your partner passed away in the last 3 years, you will be able to file amended returns and recoup that. So that's going to be, you know, one of the actual plaintiffs in the case itself. That was her damage. And all the way down to your insurance, right? Husband and wives have been enjoying Allstate homeowners discounts and cars and what have you for decades. And so it really will cause a ripple effect throughout every aspect of people's lives.
Let me get some callers in. We have Brad from, looks like Washington, D.C., joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Brad. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. Hi, and good morning, and good morning to all your guests. I just wanted to point out that you touched, Angela touched very briefly on federal benefits, and one of the most important ones that doesn't get talked about a lot is Social Security. Same-sex married couples are now eligible for Social Security benefits, whether it's a spousal benefit for a retired couple. There are also widows' benefits and children's benefits that they now will be eligible for that they have not been previously. And if people need more information, please just go to ssa.gov, scroll down a little bit. There's a purple icon that asks the question, need information about benefits for same-sex couples? Just click on it, and there will be information there. Also, I represent the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. We published a report, our foundation did, just prior to the Windsor decision last year. It's called Living Outside the Safety Net, and it details, it's a little bit dated, but if you read it, it details, it gives specific examples of benefits that same-sex married couples will be eligible for that they have not been previously. And as I mentioned, these are spousal benefits, widows' benefits, children's benefits in some situations. Well, and the other really important
thing. Well, you know what, Brad, only because we got a lot of callers here, and we'll make sure that people check out your website and get the information that they need. And I certainly appreciate the call to Radio Time. Just a quick question to you, Angela. I mean, sounds like when you add it all up, gay and lesbian couples will probably save time and money in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the first few years in your accounting, your tax preparation fees, you're actually going to end up spending probably more. Mm-hmm. But at the, you know, it'll all come out in the wash and ultimately will end up being a huge savings. These DOMAs, both federally and statewide, I don't think the people who put them in place had a clear concept of the cost to the people.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Just something that I think is important to point out, because both Angela and John spoke about this. What Judge Jones really said wasn't that gay Pennsylvanians now have a right to get married, and therefore we should be able to save money. What he said was, you've always had this right, and it's been denied you. So I, you know, when we talk about the semantics of this, I don't know if we're really saving money. It was money that was rightfully ours and rightfully belonged to these families and these couples, and wrongfully the state was taking that money. So I, you know, there's a net saving certainly to the community, but it was a savings that was ours to begin with.
Let me quote from the end of his decision, Judge Jones writing, "The issue we resolve today is a divisive one. Some of our citizens are made deeply uncomfortable by the notion of same-sex marriage. However, that same-sex marriage causes discomfort in some does not make its prohibition constitutional, nor does past tradition trump the bedrock constitutional guarantees of due process and equal protection." And John Culhaney, he references Brown versus the Board of Education, which I thought was an interesting segue.
Because he's sort of tying it into these larger ideas of civil rights, not even within the context of marriage. The really strong analogy or comparison that he draws, though, is to Loving against Virginia, right, which is the case, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, where the Supreme Court said that a state could not stop people from marrying just because they were from different races. And, you know, at that point, these interracial marriages made plenty of people uncomfortable. And, you know, that's mostly disappeared, but not 100%. And what he's saying is, just because something makes someone or some even large group of people uncomfortable is really not relevant when it comes to these basic questions of liberty and equality.
What do you think, Brian?
You know, one of my favorite parts of the analysis, actually, and one that I think will be most oft quoted, was when he's trying to determine the level of scrutiny with which to review laws that deny people rights based on their sexual orientation. And there's been a lot of question over the last couple of years about where sexual orientation would fall in the order. There are certain levels of review for race and nationality and gender. And I think that what Judge Jones did here, and you know, it's important to point out that he was a Republican nominee. To anybody that's talking about him being a sort of activist judge, he's a Republican nominee.
A George W. Bush nominee.
Frankly, as have, I believe, the majority of judges who have ruled on this issue at the federal level. But what I think he did is he laid out a really wonderful framework for the level of review that I think we'll hear quoted for years.
Go ahead, Angela.
And what I found awesome about the opinion is he actually quotes Scalia as part of his basis. So in the Windsor case, while Kennedy did an amazing job, I would agree with Scalia that he didn't do a good enough job in determining the level of scrutiny, right? He beat around the bush and talked a lot about dignity and other things like that, but he never came out and said which level of scrutiny was being used. And Scalia then, in his 12-page dissent, blasts him for that. Why did we even take the case if we weren't going to make law? Right? You said a lot, but I didn't hear you say what level of scrutiny. So now we're going to kick this back to the states with no real direction. You know, as senior judge, you didn't do your job. I mean, he blasted him. If you do nothing with the Windsor case, read the dissent. I mean, it's good drama. It's good, you know, Supreme Court drama. What Judge Jones did was take Scalia's dissent and say, you know what? I completely agree with you, and there is heightened scrutiny.
Well, we're going to take another short break. They're playing my song, and we'll get back to our conversation with Angela Giampolo, Brian Sims, and John Culhane, and with you. That phone number again, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Westchester University has been offering graduate studies for over 50 years. Today, Westchester has over 70 graduate degree and certificate programs in business and public affairs, health, visual and performing arts, education, arts and sciences, and their new doctorate of nursing practice. With campuses in suburban Chester County, the new Center City, Philadelphia location, or online. Details at wcupa.edu/grad. Graduate education at Westchester University. Learn more.
The Cannes Film Festival, the most important international film festival, concluded over the weekend. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about some of the films that won awards and that incited the deepest disagreements with our critic at large, John Powers, who was at Cannes. Join us.
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Not a pop quiz, but a festival for science.
I want scientists to talk in plain language with clarity so that we all have a leg up on these very difficult subjects that really rule our lives now.
Alan Alda on fusing entertainment and science without diluting the main ingredients. The World Science Festival next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we are talking about the fact that same-sex marriage is now legal in Pennsylvania. Last week, a federal judge overturned the state's ban on gay marriage, and the next day, Governor Corbett said he would not appeal the ruling. We're talking with John Culhane, a professor of law at Widener University School of Law, Angela Giampolo, founder and principal of Giampolo Law Group here in Philadelphia, and Brian Sims. He's a Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives serving the 182nd District in Philadelphia. Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. And if you can't get to a phone, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And we want to know what you make of Judge Jones' decision. Let me get Jay from New Hope to join us. Jay, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a very interesting conversation. Thank you all.
You're welcome.
I would just like to throw in something I just learned. My partner and I are one of the 174 couples that received marriage certificates back in the summer/fall from Mr. Haynes' office.
Montgomery.
And what came down from the court yesterday was one sentence which said that Montgomery County could start and marriage licenses again. However, it did not speak to those 175 couples of us that were in the gray area. Neither decision that came down. And it was just this morning when I spoke with Mr. Haynes' office that it was determined that, yes, all 175 of us couples are legally married. I thought that would interest you.
Well, congratulations, first of all.
Indeed, Jay. Thanks for the call. And everyone wants to do a job. Let me start with you, John Culhane.
So what court was this that issued that decision? That's the first thing I'd like to find out here.
Well, this came out of Mr. Haynes' office.
Okay.
So
I see.
Speak to that.
I see.
I saw a news article.
Okay.
So
the case is still technically before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. I believe that the state has filed a motion to have the case dismissed as moot, but the Pennsylvania Supreme Court doesn't have to dismiss it. They could still hear the case, and what I'm thinking they might do, although they will dismiss it, I think, but what I think they could do is use the occasion to declare that the law is also unconstitutional under the Pennsylvania Constitution. Uh-huh. And if they were to do that, that would immunize any decision from U.S. Supreme Court review. So if the court decided to do that and base it on the Pennsylvania Constitution, that would be a way to resolve the question in Pennsylvania once and for all. I don't think that's likely. I think what you'll see is the Eastern District case that was argued a couple of weeks ago will be dismissed, although, again, that judge isn't bound by what the court in the middle of the state did. She could decide the other way and would go to the Federal Court of Appeals. I think these things are very unlikely. I'm just saying, but I'm just putting it out there so that people know that even though it looks like this is over, and even though it probably is over, there are some loose ends that still need tying up.
Jay, thanks for the call to Radio Times. So when is it over? I mean,
when the Supreme Court, I think we all probably agree when
the Supreme Court says it's over.
Or if the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decides under the Pennsylvania Constitution that the law is unconstitutional, that would insulate it from federal review. And Pennsylvania is one of the few states where there was a law like this that wasn't in the state constitution but was a matter of statutory law, and that's why the Pennsylvania Constitution can trump it. In other states where it's in the state constitution, there's no way to trump it except through the federal constitution.
But that would immunize us here in Pennsylvania. But
yes,
still nationwide,
right.
When it's over, it's when the Supreme Court sings.
That's right. That would only make it over for Pennsylvania.
Gotcha. Let me get, thanks for the call. Let's get Lizzie to join our conversation. Hi, Lizzie. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for this conversation.
You're
very
welcome.
Interesting. My partner and I are starting to have kids, and we were wondering, now that same-sex marriage is legal, does that change how the non-bio mother would be put on the birth certificate in the hospital if that becomes automatic the way that it would with a heterosexual couple?
Sure. I'm tossing that to Angela.
Thank you. Hi, Lizzie. And congratulations on your family planning. Yes, you will be able to do what's called a pre-birth order so that you will get the birth certificate and you will already be on it, which saves a lot of time on the legal side because, as I said earlier in the show, it is still recommended, even for heterosexual couples, that when you do IVF, to always do a second parent adoption so that you are terminating without a doubt the sperm donor's parental rights. We've seen issues in other states pop up. So at least from an IVF standpoint, it sounds like that's the way that you're going to be doing your family planning. The beginning process will be much earlier, but I still recommend as best practice, although you don't need to do a second parent adoption.
Yeah, Lizzie, Brian Sims wants to ask something.
Actually, I have a question for both John and Angela.
Okay.
So what the court has said is that our laws that overtly discriminate in marriage law are no longer valid. But what we haven't had is we don't have laws that say exactly what is valid. Had there been a register of wills who decided he or she did not want to issue marriage licenses, or what's going to happen in the meantime? I mean, I ask you both. We're all lawyers, but I ask you both in a practical sense. What's going to happen as county and municipal and statewide officials choose whether or not they want to recognize these couples as legally married?
And they still have that option.
No. They can do whatever they want until they get stopped, until they get mandamused, which is a fancy legal word for stopped, right? They get enjoined from doing what they're doing. But there have been cases with recalcitrant, stubborn county and state officials. So I think it was in Iowa where they had marriage equality, but there was a county-level administrator who didn't want to put the two parents, I think it was on the birth certificate, and the case got litigated all the way to the state Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court basically said, well, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. If a couple can marry, there's a whole panoply of rights that go along with that, and we can't have people, for whatever reasons of conscience or just, disagreement, flouting those laws. So there
isn't
are
that
some,
what Haynes did in Norrison? I mean, he said was flouting.
That was
last
the argument. That right. So the argument there was whatever he thought about the marriage law, the law said what it said, and that this was not the proper forum for a state official to be, countering.
Yeah.
That.
Go ahead, Angela.
Now I love D. Bruce Haynes. Absolutely love the man. But I did write an article in the Legal Intelligencer shortly thereafter saying, register wills as Haynes is on the right side of history, but on the wrong side of the law. Okay? And it was a slippery slope that he went down, right? And it was from an advocacy standpoint, and it ended up working out. But there were several cases, as John alluded to, in New York, New Mexico, Iowa, where people similarly situated as D. Bruce Haynes thought it was unconstitutional that gay people should marry. Mm-hmm. So, imagine if there's sort of a Rick Santorum out there in Pennsylvania who has the ability to issue marriage licenses, that person could be obstinate and say, well, my constitutional beliefs and my religious beliefs say this, so I'm not going to issue them. And legally there would be a process and they would be halted and or removed from their post given the current laws. But I mean, it's an interesting way to look at the prism.
Does that answer your question?
It does. Sims? I mean, it sounds like there's going to be a lot more litigation.
Right.
But you've alluded to what I think is going to be and already is starting to be the next battle, which is people who are saying even if the state has to recognize marriage licenses, and this could be a whole separate show, what about people who have religious objections? To what extent should we accommodate those? Mm-hmm. And there have been attempts to pass laws, one of which passed, I think it was in Mississippi, the one that didn't pass in Arizona got all the attention. But you've seen even more aggressive laws that really try to exempt vast classes of people from having to recognize the marriage licenses, and even proposals that, for example, if you work in an office that issues marriage licenses, that as a matter of conscience, you can refuse to issue a marriage license for a same-sex couple. None of those has passed. There are huge constitutional issues there, but I think that's where we're headed as the next battleground.
Does this decision, Brian, change the Pennsylvania Marriage Equality Act? I mean, an act that you have been championing, lobbying for?
Absolutely. A good portion of the act that we introduced was the repeal of DOMA, the Pennsylvania DOMA, no question about it. I think on a larger scale, what it does is it's going to require a lot of us to reset our approach to advocacy in Pennsylvania. All of us who've been working on marriage equality in Pennsylvania, for the most part, have recognized that the need for an LGBT inclusive non-discrimination act is fundamental to all LGBT Pennsylvanians. And I don't want to detract from marriage in any way. But marriage equality doesn't affect every single person in the state, certainly every single LGBT person in the state, but non-discrimination does. And so, you know, we've known for years that we are at our best advocating for LGBT civil rights when we're telling our stories. If nothing else, this gives us a lot of opportunities to tell those stories. I tell people often that the most conservative that Pennsylvania is in Harrisburg in the Capitol building when we're in session. Pennsylvanians, by and large, are fine with marriage equality. And I think that what we're going to see over the next weeks, months, and years is that every single day they get more and more fine with marriage equality. The question is, what will we do with discrimination?
But by telling stories, you mean by people being out
and
saying, this is who I am and this is who I love?
Vice President Dick Cheney supports marriage equality. And I don't believe it's because his sort of policy mind arrived at that conclusion. I think it was because, like Senator Portman, he was around a gay child and really saw the impact that overt discrimination can have on that person.
Let me get to – go ahead, Angela. You wanted to add something?
Real quick, and you alluded to this earlier, that – people choose to get married, right? Very, very, very few of us choose to go to work every day. We kind of have to, right? And the integrity and the dignity that comes with being able to take your whole self to work and to put the real human on your desk that is actually your spouse, right? And so that's HB 300 in Pennsylvania is definitely the next fight.
Let me get, looks like Amos from Reading, Pennsylvania to join us. Amos, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Marty, thanks so much for holding this conversation. It's
You're
really,
welcome.
Really kind of an infomercial for my own belief system. I really appreciate I had three points I wanted to ask. One, I wanted to ask if you invited anybody who opposes marriage equality to participate in the conversation, because there's nothing I love more than to hear, you know, Christian conservatives bloviate.
Well, let me just stop you there, because I have to say that over the years, in fact, Brian Sims was on the show recently, we have debated this issue numerous times. We did not invite someone today because we felt like, at least as of today, this is the law in Pennsylvania. Let's understand what this law is about. Let's not debate it. We might debate it sometime in the future, depending on what happens. But for today's show, it's not a debate.
It'd be interesting to hear what their next step is. But the second thing I was very confused about with conservatives was they're all very fiscally conscious, and I always wondered why they went the religious route in opposing marriage equality and not just stating that the government can't afford to extend benefits to everybody. I think that would have lost in the long run, but I thought it would have been an interesting battle. And the third thing, and then I'll let you go. I wanted to thank Representative Sims for showing respect to Governor Corbett. Even if you can't respect the man, you respect the office, and he did that. And I think that is something that's lacking in the country. If you don't like the guy, that's great, but you can still respect him and call him by his title. I thought that was very classy.
Well, Amos, I appreciate the call. Brian Sims, go ahead.
Amos, I tell you, to your point, I think one of the things that we need to take away from this, and we've seen this with both Governor Corbett and with Senator Toomey in their response to ENDA and non-discrimination over the last year, the states that were sort of the low-hanging fruit, the states that had Democratic legislatures that were relatively liberal or a Democratic governor that was supportive of marriage equality, those were the first 15 or so states that passed marriage equality. The rest of the states are going to do it in a way that Pennsylvania did, and they're going to have to do it with we're a completely Republican-controlled state, our governor, our House, and our Senate. And so what that means is that the path to equality cannot simply be about being a liberal or about being being a Democrat. And when Senator Toomey and when Governor Corbett came out in support of non-discrimination, we weren't seeing the softer side of their conservativeness. We were seeing people who are very professed conservatives find within their conservative ideology support for non-discrimination. And that's really critically important. You know, if you poll Pennsylvanians support this by and large, really regardless of their ideology, more and more every day. And that's really important. Equality cannot be a one-party issue.
Let me just squeeze something in that Amos mentioned, one of the arguments, and my understanding of the arguments against gay marriage was that the Pennsylvania marriage law promoted procreation and child rearing and well-being of children, traditional values, and also economic protection for Pennsylvania businesses. That was part of their argument.
Well, so you hear this from time to time, and I have to say that this is probably the worst argument of some pretty bad arguments in favor of excluding same-sex couples, because the argument really is it will just be too expensive for the state to expand these rights. But you might as well say it would be cheaper for the state to exclude couples married on a Tuesday. I mean, the question is really whether the exclusion is independently justified. So you could single out any group of people and say that, you know, it'll be more expensive to include them. So that really is not responsive. The other thing I wanted to mention, I know we're sort of up on time, is in terms of religion, those arguments work in the popular press. They don't work in courts.
Ah, interesting. Angela, so last word to you.
Yep, I'll quickly throw in there that every state thus far that has legalized gay marriage has seen a huge jump in revenues due to those weddings. Brian Sims and I have been telling people for years, if you get married out of state or internationally, send your receipts to your congressmen and your representatives and show them how much money is not being spent in the Commonwealth. And that is over today. And probably in the next 6 months to a year, we'll see the reports of how much the Commonwealth made on this decision.
That's a great point.
Well, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Angela Giampolo, thank you very much. And she's founder principal of Giampolo Law Group here in Philadelphia, an advocate for the LGBT community, also known as Philly Gay Lawyer. Brian Sims, thank you very much as well, a Democratic member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives serving the 182nd District. And John Culhane, thank you very much as well, professor of law at Widener University School of Law, a contributing writer to Slate. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, podcasts, archives, and we did post some photos of our guests on our Facebook page. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.